on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And our thanks as always to Afric and to Andrew. It's Tuesday, March 26th. You're listening to an extended Game On as we bring you live commentary of the Republic of Ireland against Switzerland from the Aviva Stadium. Stephen Kelly, Paul Curry, Keith Tracy and Pat Fenlon will join Adrian Eames and John Kenny for our match coverage from the Aviva. We will check in there shortly. We will also be hearing from the new interim technical advisor, Brian Kerr, and how he's finding life back in the international fold.
And in rugby, as the Irish players return from the men's Six Nations, we'll check in with Bernard Jackman as focus shifts to the form and fortunes of our provinces. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at Game On 2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
How are you, Ruby?
Great, Damien. Yourself?
Not a bother, alive and well. Trying to stay out of trouble.
The Aviva at the weekend, I heard, John.
I did, yeah. I think there's an issue. I don't know if you've talked about this. I think there's an issue around this grouping of the games together in sets of two in order to sell the tickets. Because I was around Dublin City Centre on Saturday afternoon and there was a great vibe and the place was hopping and there was loads of people around enjoying themselves. And then there's only 38,000 people in the Aviva. But you're saying to yourself, if you're travelling from Cork or Galway or somewhere up Northern Ireland, hotel prices in Dublin, plus the fact that you can only buy tickets for the Belgium game at this point if you bought tickets for the Switzerland game tonight, I wonder, did it put people off? Because it was, I won't say the place was hopping.
It wasn't hopping, but what was it?
What was it? I thought there was a lot of goodwill towards John O'Shea. It was Baltically cold, so we were looking for a performance that would, you know, cheer us up and everything else. I thought Ireland looked all right. I think there was an awful lot of people. Keeving, it's funny how certain players seem to capture the imagination. Keeving Kelleher got nearly the biggest cheer of the night when the teams were read out. And then you look at the importance of someone like Chidoze Ogbene, who obviously has just got a connection with particularly the young fans, because the roof nearly came off the place when his name was called out. So you would wonder, if neither of them are involved tonight, will it be even a little bit more tepid? But listen, I thought John O'Shea did well. Big night in the career of his, or big night in his career. Is he still in the mix for the job? Who knows?
We were talking about it last night with Alan Cawley, and I could definitely say that Alan was leading the John O'Shea fan club anyway. There was no doubt about that. But I don't know. I thought it was, you were there. I thought it was good to watch you tonight. I thought an Irish team that were set up and were hard to beat. I don't know. I thought there was something.
Yeah.
I thought it was a step in the right direction, Damien.
Do you know, the thing that you could see and that was really evident was John was obviously part of the backroom staff under Stephen Kenny. Stephen Rice, who was one of the analysts, was there under Stephen Kenny as well. So that there was that continuity, that he wasn't going in as a completely new voice who had a very limited period of time to put a shape on a side. So, like, the thing that really struck me, and when Ireland were, first half, they were defending the Lansdowne Road end of the ground, and just by pure virtue of where our seats are, when they dropped into a five, it was literally straight across a line from where I was sitting, and just the level of organisation that existed was something to behold. Like, how different a night would it have been? Poor Evan Ferguson is just one of those ones at this stage. He just needs one to go in off his backside or something, doesn't he? To get back into a run of form. Like, I felt so sorry for him. But listen, I thought there was great energy around the place. Like, you could definitely see, you know, people did get into it. It kind of tapered off a little bit in the second half. But, every time, in particular, like, Ogbene is just such a star. And I know I keep labouring this point, but, like, he is the one who was really come to make a real strong connection with people. So, yeah.
Good. It's good that someone has a connection with the fans. It's all very, very important.
Yeah. Stephen Kelly joins us from the Aviva Stadium. Stephen, how are you?
Not too bad, Damien. Ruby as well.
Good, Steve.
Good to talk. I presume it's too early to even have a whisper of a team, is it?
Yeah, I think at the moment, I'm looking around, the coach has just arrived in the monitor in front of us, so you can see John get off the bus with Glenn and Paddy and all the players in pursuit of that. So yeah, it's hard to know what's going to happen, but I'd say there'll be a few changes. Just for him and his tenure, he's going to want to see faces, if it's an opportunity for him to potentially have the job. You want to get an idea of what players you actually like and what positions you want to play in. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he does make changes. I would say there'll be a few. And also, at this stage in the window, players going back to the clubs, managers aren't going to want players playing 290 minutes games this close succession to each other at this stage in the season. So I'm sure he'll be getting a lot of phone calls from club managers as well, which will be something he won't be used to. He'll be used to the other end of it, his manager's calling on his behalf, but manager's calling him, telling him please don't only give them a certain amount of time, which is always goes on with international camps.
Right, so you're John O'Shea. Who are you changing?
Goalkeeper. Even though I know what Damien said about, I think, bring him in, back in, to give him a chance. Adamida, I think, chance to play as well. Evan Ferguson, I think I'd start as well. I want to get him a goal if I can. Actually, the lads are walking down the pitch now. As we sit here, you can see them just getting a feel of the surface. And then if there's a few lads in that side that haven't actually got that much game time for their club, this could be an important chance for them to get those minutes in as well. So, you know, I'm sure Josh is looking at that and thinking, right, who can I get minutes to? Who can I help out them throughout this part of the season? Because that's important as an international manager as well. If you have a squad of players, what players do you know need game time and you can give it to them at this stage? So, yeah, that's important too.
What are you expecting from the Swiss?
Difficult game. They'll be organised. They'll be hard to beat. I expected more from Belgium the weekend, I have to admit. I expected, you know, I think they just flatter to deceive every time I see Belgium. I don't know what it is, but I expect an organised game, tougher than what people expect. I think on the back of a 0-0 draw against Belgium, people are going to expect us going into this game and win it. That's not going to be the case. It's not going to be a really easy, comfortable game. I know it's second day of a friendly window, so I can't imagine it be, you know, all gun blazing from both sides just because of the actual fixture and what it is. But Switzerland be decent organised side, hard to break down, competitive, attacking wise they'd be decent as well. So we're going to have, it's going to be a decent enough match for us to play against, and if we're off it, which I don't think we will be, I think we'll be at it. I think the energy levels should be high for us because, you know, I think John will bring that. I think the players are looking to impress, who potentially could be the new manager.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about what the mindset is like in a week like this, because you obviously would have been part of the squad after Giovanni Trapattoni resigned and Noel King took charge of what were a couple of qualifiers at the time. But, like, the day John was unveiled as interim head coach, Mark Cannon was so definitive, in my mind, in basically saying, we have our man, but we can't announce it until April. But yes, there does seem to be this groundswell that John is still very much a contender. So, like, do you think, is this potentially a trial run for him to be the manager? Or, like, I have a theory, and I don't have an awful lot to base it on, that John O'Shea, Glenn Whelan, and Paddy McCarthy could be the backroom staff for whoever it is who's going to come in.
Yeah, see, it's so hard to know. When John got announced for us, I thought, right, they're giving it to someone that potentially could be the manager. If they step in and do well in these two games, it's a safe pair of hands, as in it's someone who's loved, great footballing career, early in his journey as a coach. But, you know, if he comes in and does well and acquits himself, then it's an opportunity for him to stay in the job. Then they come out with that statement saying that they're guaranteed they've got someone in April. And obviously all eyes went to Lee Carsley. Now he said no. Everybody's going, well, who possibly could it be? And I don't know if your manager coming in, though, as much as the FAI might want to have these guys involved, what manager wants to come in and be told these are your background staff? Like, you want to have your own people. As much as you want to toe the line of the, you know, who you're coming in to work for, you're going to want to have your own say on the people you bring in. So if you're being told that these are a tree you're taking as your background staff, that might put managers off. And because already, as you're coming in, you could be seeing, right, this is my ready-built successor that they have in place, that their American has got a future Ireland manager and they want me to take him on as a backup staff. So I don't know whether that's even possible. But is there a realisation that John could be the manager? I think absolutely. Because I was convinced that they had someone for April, but now Lee Carsley had a picture, I'm still unsure.
Yeah, and again, we can throw around all sorts of theories about who it could be and what reason it could be, but listen, we'll wait and you know, see how it plays out. But you're basically saying there won't have been, say, a drop-off in standards or a drop-off in what players are like around Castleknock and around the training centre out in the Sports Ireland campus.
No.
Because it's an international week, and irrespective of who's on the sideline, an international week is an international week.
Listen, every time you get a chance to come and play for Ireland and play for your country, regardless of who's in charge or regardless of who the game's against, it's an opportunity for you to excel and be one of the top players in your country. You don't take that lightly, and these might not come around that often for these players. So, you know, you grab them with both hands every chance you get. I always would have. When Noel King took over, no disrespect to Noel King, but I don't think there was any chance that Noel King was going to get the senior team job. Maybe if we beat Germany in Germany on the way to win the World Cup, that could have been an opportunity. But I don't think anybody realistic thought that was a chance. But we were going out to play in qualifiers against major nations, and every time you play for Ireland, like Ruby is telling you, anytime you go out to perform, it's you that's on trial. It's you that's being judged. It's you that's being looked at, regardless of who the manager is. So you want to perform to the highest level, and I don't think these players would be thinking any differently.
Stephen, I imagine, leaving the backroom team aside as an assistant manager and coaches, but I imagine the same people stay working in the jobs, be that kit men, physios, doctors, all the different people that are around. And if a new manager comes in, he's going to ask questions about squad members, how to behave. Yeah. And all those people are there watching the whole time. So I know for me as a professional, you have to get on with everybody and create an impression. So I automatically think there couldn't be a drop off. You have to keep impressing everyone.
Yeah, like there can't be. Well, like, it's your career is so short, and if any sporting level, you have to maintain it. And if you want to stay at the top level, and like you said, the likes of kit men, doctors, you know, all these people that are around constantly, and they'll stay the same. But just for the manager himself, he's not going to see you, right? You've come in and you've completely tossed these two games off. You've not been bothered because it's not the manager that's in charge. And then you turn up. That won't bode well in your character or the type of person you are. And if you're someone that can turn it on and turn it off, you want to constantly be on as a player and constantly be performing. And like I said, playing for Ireland is one of the greatest privileges you could ever hope to have as a sports person. So no one here is going to take that lightly, I don't think.
It's been a kind of a strange week because the players who get rolled out for media, everyone is talking about what's going to happen in the future and everything else. And could John O'Shea be the man sitting alongside you who could be the coach on a long-term period? One of those players has had to kind of answer those questions this week is Dara O'Shea. It was put to him in advance of the game. As to whether or not John O'Shea had the attributes to take on the job on a permanent basis.
I think us as a group, you know, we just want somebody who understands Irish football and knows what it is. And obviously the manager here is probably the best experience in that sense. You know, he's played so many times for this country and worked under great managers, great Irish managers too. So, you know, there's a lot to take from that as well. Obviously us as a group, you know, we're quite a young group and we want to learn too. So we want someone who's going to teach us, you know what I mean? Bring us in along the way. And, you know, hopefully there's a lot of good that can come from this group in the future. So, yeah, look, we just want to play for our country and do the best we can. And obviously, at the end of the day, it's not our decision who is the manager. So we have to crack on with that. But yeah, we want to win games and represent our country the best we can. And that's all we can do from our perspective.
Do you feel that connection, that having a manager who has a deep connection to Ireland, to the Irish team, is important?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. At the end of the day, we are all Irish. We all understand what it is to be Irish and how special it is. And, you know, we're extremely lucky to have the opportunity to represent this country, and you know, to have someone who understands that feeling as well, I think is massive. And someone that the fans can resonate with too, do you know what I mean? You know, you want to have that backing and support from the country, and I think as Irish fans, you know, I'm an Irish fan myself, I'd want that too, so yeah.
That's Dara O'Shea chatting in advance of the game. And like Stephen, it's one of those thankless positions to do media in a week like this, because he's not going to turn around and say, oh no, sure, listen, he's only been an assistant manager at Stoke and he's done a bit at Birmingham under Wayne Rooney and he's done this and he's not really ready. So he's going to come out and he's going to say, you know, it's you're going to get a certain answer to these questions.
You're not going to dismiss it in any way, shape or form, because he could potentially be the manager. There's no way, no. And I don't think the FAI or the FAI have been giving the players any inside information to who it's going to be, because if that was the case, it would have leaked. Like, normally, let's face it, we often get some sort of idea who's going to be the manager or what's happening. That hasn't happened at all. So they're keeping their cards very close to their chest, if they have any at the moment, which we just don't know. So, yeah, as a player being put in that situation, you're going to toe the line. But you can't underestimate the level of respect that these guys will have for John. They would have grown up fans. Some of them would have, there's a crossover of the players that would potentially would have played with John in the first team as well. And when you meet him, Ruby, I don't know whether you have or not, Damien, like, he's just a really endearing person. Mm, he's massively. Very honest. He's very open. It's very hard not to like John, and he's someone that you want to play for. So these players are going to come in, and then you're just trying to build in that wealth of knowledge, you know, he's had throughout the career he's had as a player. So, you know, the respect is there from him, from his playing side. Whether he'll get that as a coach or as a manager, that only time will tell based on how long he's going to be in the job for.
So when you're in a dressing room, do you look at someone like him and say he's a manager in the making in the future? Or like, are he and someone like Glenn people that you would have said, yeah, they've definitely got a future in the game and the potential for a successful future in the game?
It's funny because when we... So all of myself, John, Glenn, Paddy, all of us all did our coaching badges together while we're still playing for the senior Irish team. So we all, there was about
seven or eight of us that went into it together. And you kind of look, there was obviously a squad of 23, seven or eight of us went off and started doing our badges because we were starting forward thinking of that's the next part of our career, if that's something we want to go into. And, you know, you could tell from the different tactics and different ways, John wouldn't have been a screamer or a shower. He was just very analytical, take people to the side. And that was his coaching method. And that's the way he was as a player as well. And you kind of think that he's someone that was a student of the game, is what people often like to say, is the managers are kind of studious, stand on the side and take things in. And John is one of those, and he's always kind of earmarked that a managerial career is the way he wanted to go. And to be fair, he's had a bit of experience throughout. He's been with Reading, he's been with Stoke, he's been with the 21s with Ireland, he's been with the senior international team as well for a little bit. So he's done a fair bit on the ground coaching, which is important. But yeah, he's definitely someone you would have looked at. And again, when we did our badges together, someone that you think, yeah, he's going to go on to be a manager.
Well, maybe he will be the next Irish manager. Time will tell, because between all of us and everyone I've listened to, nobody else seems to have another suggestion, Stephen, unless you have one hidden away somewhere.
Honestly, that's what I'm saying. These cards, which we say keep close, yes, I'm not sure they have any. I don't think we've ever been in a situation before, Ireland, where you haven't got some sort of an idea or sniff of who's going to come in. And at the moment, that's all. It's just whispers. It was Lee Carsley, and now that's gone. There's nothing seems to be out there. And the fact that they were so adamant to who's going to be named in April made everybody think, right, they obviously have something set in stone. But who knows? Genuinely, who knows?
Is success tonight as much about the performance then, and, you know, this continuation of, you know, it'd be great to see a couple of the new young lads get a run tonight. So, you know, like, what do you want, just to finish, like, what ultimately would have you satisfied leaving the Aviva Stadium come 10 o'clock this evening?
I would just love to see a high-energy performance where we look solid and we look dangerous in attack, even if we didn't go on to win the game. But if we look like a team that's... You know, before, hustle and bustle, you know, be defensively in a position. And I don't mean sit back and defend teams. I just mean look like we're not going to concede every time we go forward. Look like we have a basis and a shape about us. And then just energy. And I know it's asking a lot for the guys to come out here and fly around the pitch in this game, in this stage of a window that's friendlies at this stage in the season, which is what I've already alluded to. But I would like to see an energetic performance from a team that I know that's the way for us to progress as a nation, the way for us to proceed and get forward. We have to go about games, we have to be in it from the start, 100% level of energy. And I think that's something that I'd love to see tonight for part of the game.
Did you ever have a phantom hamstring or groin in a week like this that a manager was on the phone saying, Stephen, tell them you can't play, get home here quick?
No. For me, I was glum for punishment. I think 110 games involved Ireland, never missed one of those opportunities. I'd never miss it, honestly. And the manager, I think, once had Steve Bruce screaming at me not to go. And I think he actually did make a phone call and pulled me out last minute in a friendly thing. But it wasn't down to me. It was down to the manager. I think he was down to Steve Staunton at the time, who made me go back to the club. But apart from that, no, always turn up, always want to be here. Never turn out. I'll play for Ireland now if they let me.
Well, listen, you have John's number, so listen.
I'm going to shout down to him quickly.
That's it, yeah, because Seamus had a good run in the other night, so you listen, he needs someone for right wing back. Stephen, thanks so much for being with us for now. Stephen's going to be part of our ongoing team at the Aviva Stadium. Paul Curry, Keith Tracy, Pat Fenlon also there. Adrian's going to anchor that coverage after 7 o'clock with John Kenny on commentary, Ruby.
Yeah, that will be a good evening. So it will, with a bit of luck. Also tonight, of course, there are Euro qualifiers. There are six teams left competing for a place at the Euro Championships in 2024. And earlier today, we caught up with Tom Coleman, of Wales Online to preview the Welsh game against Poland.
Game on. Football.
Obviously, Wales fresh off a victory against Finland at the weekend in the semi-final. 4-0 winners. Poland trashed Estonia 5-1. You excited about tonight's game? Wales have a shocking record against Poland.
Yeah. I think that's putting it mildly. I think you have to go back all the way to 1973, which I believe was the first meeting between the two teams for a Wales win. Poland ever since have been a bit of a bogey side for Wales. Excited. But I think nervous is probably the. It's probably the main emotion going through the capital at the moment. I've actually stood in Cardiff City Stadium now. You can already kind of feel the atmosphere building, even though there's not really any fans in here yet. But town's been jumping all day. These are the sort of occasions that Welsh football fans have I've sort of grown accustomed to over the years. And I think, you know, we're in for a very, very special atmosphere. Here's hoping we have a performance to match.
Well, you might have. It was 58 years following the 58 World Cup that Wales were absent from main competition finals, semi-finalists then at Euro 2016. They were at the Euros in 2020. Is it almost expectation in Wales now that you qualify for a Euros?
I think there probably is an increased expectation. I mean, look, before 2016, you know, as you've just alluded to there, I mean, the concept of qualifying for major tournaments was still a pretty alien one for many Wales fans. But, you know, now, 2016 was nearly 10 years ago now. So there's a whole generation of Wales fans who have kind of grown accustomed to the idea of Wales either qualifying for major tournaments or coming close to qualifying for major tournaments. So, yeah, there's definitely been heightened expectation. But I still think, you know, there's a lot of... It would still be very significant for Wales to qualify tonight. I think in the past, obviously, it was about sort of shaking off that record and all the years of hurt. But I think now, one of the big reasons it would be so significant is that it would show that there's life after Gareth Bale.
Yeah, and that was a big question that was asked about this group. And is that, I know there's a whole quandary around Aaron Ramsey and his involvement in the squad this week. Is that part of his inclusion, just to have one of that old guard who's there to maybe guide some of the younger players through?
Yeah, look, I think it's Aaron's obviously, I mean, look, first and foremost, he's still a fantastic footballer, still a very technically gifted footballer. But the fact of the matter is, I think, he's not as in the picture now for Wales. And Rob Page, I think, has admitted himself that, you know, Wales are perhaps not quite as reliant on players like Aaron Ramsey as perhaps they used to be. I mean, the idea, you know, a year or two ago that you would... I mean, if you put forward the idea that Aaron Ramsey might not get into this starting lineup back then, I mean, you'd be laughed out of the room. But now I think even if Aaron Ramsey were fully fit and firing, which he isn't, he hasn't played a lot of football. He's had his injury concerns this season. But I think even if he was fully fit, you know, it's a question of who do you drop? Where do you fit him in? But I think Rob Page he's nevertheless been keen to stress the importance of Aaron Ramsey behind the scenes, having that experienced head in the dressing room, someone who can, you know, really help guide what's still a young team, remember. I mean, even Ethan Ampadu, who won his 50th cap on Thursday, I mean, he's still only 23, remember. So, you know, there's still a lot of youth in this team. And, I think Aaron Ramsey behind the scenes is probably seen as a figure who probably still has a part to play in that. Mm.
When we look at the potential team selection tonight, you know, there was a time, no more than with the Republic of Ireland, that you'd have picked the starting 11 fairly easily because the depth of talent that was available wasn't as wholesome as we would have perhaps liked it to have been. But you look at the weekend, Brooks, Wilson, Johnson, that triumvirate replaced by Kiefer Moore and Daniel James in particular, that Page has a couple of headaches tonight, doesn't he, in terms of which is his most potent starting lineup to see them over the line?
Yeah, he does. He does. And, you know, he more or less, I mean, we heard from Rob Page yesterday, and he more or less said the same thing. He was very, very impressed by the contributions of Daniel James and Kiefer Moore off the bench. So, yeah, he does have a bit of a selection headache. I mean, it depends really on how different he views the challenge of Poland. I think, you know, it's going to be a very different test tonight. I think the margins will be a lot smaller. So, you know, it would be interesting to see if he opts for that front three again. You know, there was a lot of pace, a lot of athleticism with those three players that you just mentioned. And, you know, it's going to be hard to drop any of them. But at the same time, you have the likes of Daniel James and Kiefer Moore putting their hands up. And, you know, it's a nice problem to have, as the old cliche goes.
It looks like Poland will be without Aston Villa right back Matty Cash. But what are the Welsh defenders going to do with Robert Lewandowski?
Well, I think that's probably going to be the key question tonight, isn't it? I think from a Wales point of view, I think there's a couple of things that worry me really tonight. One is, you know, as comfortable as it was on Thursday night against Finland, you know, the Finns did still manage to find some joy behind that back line. They did still manage to create chances, and you suspect if they'd had a bit more quality up front, you know, Wales might have been punished a bit more on the night. So that is a bit of a concern. They're going to have to keep things very tight. They can't concede early because I think, you know, Poland, this is the other thing that worries me a little bit about Poland, is that they're a very streetwise side. And we saw that when they were down here for the Nations League. You know, they're very good at the dark arts, shall we say. And I think coping with that, it hasn't always been a strong point for Wales. So, you know, a good start, keeping it tight for the first 10, 15 minutes is going to be crucial for them.
Obviously, last summer when Wales suffered back-to-back defeats to Armenia and Turkey, this campaign looked sort of lost. Do you think that they've turned a table or turned a tide since then? And if so, how?
Yeah, look, I think this campaign was always going to be a little bit bumpy. Or, you know, what I mean, the reason I alluded to earlier, you know, transitioning to life after Gareth Bale was never going to be easy. And it was never going to be easy to find that formula to go out and do well in qualifying campaigns. I think the turning point for me was probably the win over Croatia, because I mean there was a lot of speculation swirling around about Rob Page, you know, comments from Noel Mooney before that international break, which, you know, I think went down pretty badly with a lot of people in that dressing room. And I think what you have now is you have a group of players that are, I think, determined to fight for Rob Page as well as getting Wales to another major tournament. Apologies, there was a big air horn up there, as you could for there.
Yeah, so somebody's getting in on the atmosphere easy. Can I just ask you? I had intended to bring up Noel Mooney and that criticism back in October, and I was wondering if it was the fact that he has a significant profile over here as a player and then as an administrator when the FAI was in a particularly difficult period, but those comments really do seem to have created somewhat of a divide between the playing group and the administrative side of the Football Association of Wales. And we can't underestimate the galvanising effect that had within the squad and extended team management.
Yeah, I guess so. Look, I mean, I don't want to get drawn too much into how the players feel about Noel Mooney. I don't think Noel Mooney is a figure that's going to be particularly discussed in the dressing room. I think, yeah, on the one hand, it isn't helpful, but on the other, you know, Rob Page's job has been the source of speculation in the media as well. And, you know, I think this is a big, big game for him, if no one else. I mean, it's because you'd have to say, if Wales don't get through tonight, those questions around Rob Page's future are only going to get more and more pronounced. So, you know, they're not entirely out of the woods in terms of that speculation just yet, but I'm pretty confident that they'll be able to put it to one side tonight and focus on the job at hand.
Can I just, before we let you go, it's obviously such a significant night for Welsh football. The Cardiff City Stadium has long been the home venue. On a night like tonight, is there ever a question around moving it to somewhere like the Principality, which obviously has a bigger attendance and would be that bit more intimidating, or is it just now long established that the stadium a couple of miles down the road is home and that's where we play irrespective of what's in store?
It's not a question that's ever really debated too much in Wales, to be honest. I think the only people who seem to float the idea are people outside of Wales, because I think they view, you know, they see a stadium the size of the Principality Stadium, they see the size of this game, and, you know, I think it's an easy conclusion to kind of draw that maybe that should be the venue for these types of games. But look, the players love playing at Cardiff City Stadium, the fans love being here. I would push back on the idea that the Principality Stadium would be more intimidating, because, you know, the games that Wales have played there in recent years, the atmosphere has actually been quite flat.
I mean,
a lot of fans don't particularly think it's suited to football. But I mean, perhaps it is a little unfair because the last game they played there was obviously a friendly against Spain. But I think it's also kind of feeling of, you know, if it isn't broke, don't fix it, because, you know, Wales have a fantastic record here. They create a wonderful atmosphere. I mean, I can't wait to hear the national anthem tonight. I mean, that's going to be really, really something very, very special.
It looks like being a big night for Welsh football. Hopefully they get the job done against Poland. I don't know, Damien, are you slightly envious how Wales are doing? You're standing here
massively,
thinking about it from an Irish point of view.
And I've enjoyed games in the Cardiff City Stadium. So Tom, don't worry, I'm not trotting all over the Cardiff City Stadium. I've been there on more than one occasion, but maybe I'm getting sucked into the rivalry and the rugby that, you know, exacerbates the atmosphere. But I don't know, Tom, there would be a debate over here that our playing pool and the Welsh playing pool are similarly matched, but for some reason the Principality of Wales seems to punch collectively bigger than the Irish. Would that be a fair way of it seen being assessed over here, Ruby?
I'd say it is, yeah. I think the expectation is fair to be the same. I don't know. Obviously, Tom and you're more on the ground than we are, but the success of the Welsh soccer team seems to have inspired a nation of soccer-playing kids in Wales, and it's maybe affecting the rugby team.
Yeah, look, I think Wales has been... I think first and foremost, Wales has been a huge... has benefited hugely from the Premier League. And I know some people in Wales might not... Well, they might get a little bit annoyed by me saying that, but you know, you look at the big players that have come through for Wales, so many of them have come through Premier League academies. And I think, you know, Wales have been very, very good as well on, you know, snapping up players who are Welsh qualified, getting them into the camp, allowing them to sort of get a feel for the place, and allowing them to make their own decision. I think, look, it's very, very difficult to sort of boil down a short answer as to why Wales are doing so well and producing so many players. But, you know, it's taken this generation has taken, you know, the best part of 15, 20 years to come to fruition. And I think that's the key thing, is that you have to make the decisions now, and you have to give the necessary people, well, appoint the right people in the necessary positions. And then you have to have a little bit of patience for it to come to fruition. But, you know, you see the young players that are coming through for Wales. I mean, Jordan James, 19 years old. I expect him to start tonight again. I mean, he's been a revelation in the centre of the park for them. You know, there's been some really, really exciting youngsters. I mean, I mentioned Ethan Ampadu. It's very, very easy to forget that he's only 23. And, you know, the likes of Daniel James and Harry Wilson, David Brooks, Brennan Johnson have all benefited, you know, from Premier League Academy experience, and you know, we're beginning to see that. And you know, I don't know what the situation is like in Ireland. You guys would know better than I do on that, but I think that's been a very key point in the development of Welsh football for me.
Well, it looks like it's coming to fruition, and patience, oh, that word, does it even exist in society these days? Tom, the very best of luck tonight in Cardiff, and I think we all hope it goes well for Wales.
Game on.
Football.
Damien, have you an Irish team?
I do. Three changes. It's just landed in front of us. So Gavin Bazunu comes in place of Kevin Kelleher. My mate Chidozie Ogbene is obviously out injured. He's replaced by Mikey Johnson. And in the centre of midfield, Jason Knight comes in place of Will Smallbone. You know, the newest gripe that people have in football and in sport, is particularly soccer, is when the team is just given a numerical order and not like positions. Do you know, this is what really has started to wind people up on social media. So Liverpool have done this. So it's like the goalkeeper, and then they just give you the rest of the numbers in increasing order. So the FAI have done the same thing tonight. But I'm presuming it'll be Bazunu in goal, a back three of Dara O'Shea, Andrew Omabamadile, and Nathan Collins. Seamus Coleman on one wing back. Robbie Brady one wing back, as was the case the other night. So you'll have, Josh Cullen and Jason Knight in midfield, and then a three of Sammy Smodzik's, Evan Ferguson, and who am I leaving out? Mikey Johnson along the front.
That sounds about right to me. Not much change from the other night. Going to play with a five again, much to the disgust of some people, but hey, I'm all for not losing before anything else happens. Yeah.
Mark Langdon is with us. Mark, how are you?
Well, I'm good. I was just listening there, Damien, to you bemoaning the team sheets. I would be one of those furious that the team sheets not come over in something like a formation. I think it's, it annoys me anyway.
If you listen carefully, Mark, you'd have got to the point in where I was trying to work out the Irish team formation where I couldn't find whose name was
exactly.
It. I'm going down through it going,
Mikey Johnson.
Who have I not called out? Mikey Johnson, he's the other one. So anyway, listen, maybe it's a sign of our age.
maybe.
Before we get stuck into one or two of the other games, we've just been chatting there about Wales and Poland. Who do you see progressing to the Euros from what is has the potential to be a very, very tight encounter in Cardiff tonight?
I think it will be tight. I would always go, I think, with home advantage. Cardiff, Wales very strong when they're in Cardiff. They've won sort of big playoff games here previously. Poland have got the standout player on either team in Lewandowski, but the supporting sort of act there, it just isn't as strong as it used to be. So, you know, Lewandowski's not somebody, you know, if you think back to like Gareth Bale, he could win games on his own. You pick it up 30, 40 yards out and smash it into the top corner. Lewandowski needs the service. It hasn't been coming throughout qualifying. So I think if Poland play like they have been doing in qualifying, I think it's a good opportunity for Wales. But if you're watching the other game between Georgia and Greece in the Euro playoff final tonight, you'll see how tight that game is. And I just expect all of the games to be really nervy, given, you know, what's at stake.
Well, a lot at stake. Obviously, you said Georgia are playing Greece and Ukraine are playing Iceland. That game, of course, taking place in Poland due to circumstances in the Ukraine. But go on, Mark, give us a prediction.
Well, I'd go for Ukraine to beat Iceland. I think that, you know, Iceland have done very well to reach this stage, and Ukraine nearly went out against Bosnia in the semi-final sort of last week, but managed to turn it around, two late goals. If you look at the sort of player pool on either team, Ukraine's quite a bit stronger than Iceland. Obviously not playing at home, as you say there, Ruby. They're playing in Poland, but they've been playing there now for long enough that it's not completely alien to them. So I think Ukraine can come through that one. And I mean, Georgia against Greece, I've just left that game, but when I was watching it, it was sort of 70 odd minutes in, it was 0-0. There'd been one shot on target in the entire match, and you know, there's a lot of nerves at playing. Greece are kicking lumps out of Georgia. Three of the back four have been booked, and you know, they really are being physical. Greece, of course, were in with Ireland not so long ago, and you've played Georgia quite a lot as well. One of them teams will be at the Euros in sort of 15, 20 minutes' time, although it could easily go extra time and penalties.
Mark, is this a format that works for you? It seems to have a kind of this, you know, two single games which have such a bearing. You know, you don't have that, the potential for the dead rubber of a second leg if one team has the dominance in the first leg. It seems to have provided really tense occasions.
I think it is more exciting. There's no doubt about that. You could argue about the fairness of it, and, you know, should one team be at home for such a big game? And, you know, international football, home advantage is worth a fair bit in those matches usually. And, the playoffs were going very much to kind of home form for a lot of them. So you could argue that kind of a two-legged is a fairer occasion and fairer for both teams. But I love the kind of the drama of a one-off game. And I think that they have worked, and we've seen surprises and we've seen great moments and great goals since they went down to one leg. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
There are a couple of decent friendlies on tonight as well. England are playing Belgium, Scotland are playing Northern Ireland, and Scotland in particular, who are heading to the Euros. But they'll be looking for some sort of a performance after getting hockeyed on Friday night by the Dutch.
Yeah, they will. I mean, Steve Clark's side were, you know, flying not that long ago, and they've suffered a few setbacks since then, heavy defeats to England and to Netherlands. So they will be, you're absolutely right to say, I think that they'll be wanting to sort of get a win. Friendlies results don't tend to matter, but I agree that definitely will feel like they need a performance and a victory to send them on their way. Northern Ireland results, you know, maybe not sort of progressing quite as quickly as some would like, but I think the performances are definitely getting better. Young team, Michael O'Neill is I think building something for sort of, you know, it might not be in the next 18 months. You might see the benefits of this in 3 or 4 years' time, but I can see sort of a plan and a direction with these younger players. England against Belgium, England were rocked by that defeat against Brazil, probably. Came at the right time in terms of a wake-up call. Some of the backup players didn't do themselves sort of, you know, proper justice, I don't think, in that game. Belgium, a difficult team to weigh up. I'm not that convinced about them going into the Euros. I think their older players are maybe too old, if you like, and some of the younger ones, Bakayoko and Doku on the wings, sort of two very exciting players, but it's probably a tournament or two too soon for them. So it's, you get that sometimes in international football, don't you, with the kind of generations, and it doesn't all come together at the same time. So a decent opportunity for England to get back to winning ways. If they were to lose the game on, or even not win, I think the confidence that's been around the team in the last sort of year or so would start to evaporate. There were already question marks after what happened against Brazil.
Well, those ones in Dublin would have to disagree with you. That's a decent Belgian side who couldn't get a kick here at the weekend. So,
yeah, but it's a completely different one that's playing in
the Wembley tonight. It doesn't matter. It's still Belgium. Mark Langdon, thanks a million for taking our call. We have a quick break to take.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, where we have an extended show tonight as we'll be heading over to the Aviva shortly for live coverage of the Ireland versus Switzerland game. But last night I mentioned the Irish show jumping team as one of my weekend highlights after their victory in the Longines Show Jumping League at Ocala. So we tracked down the only man with more jobs than me, and that is the acting head of high performance at Horse Sport Ireland, Bernard Jackman. Bernard, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Yeah, I was privileged to be at that event. Obviously, I'm new to this game, but phenomenal performance by our four riders, Daniel Coyle, Keane O'Connor, Derek Kenny and Shane Sweetman, to win the second leg of this new competition, the Longines League of Champions. So we had 18 of the top 20 riders in the world competing in the 10 best nations, and our lads were brilliant. Only one pole down over out of 84 jumps, and put us in top position now heading into the next round, which is in St. Gallen next month.
Yeah, it is a fair performance. And obviously they've changed the rules slightly with Nations Cups. Only three riders go in the second round and everyone's score has to count. So to finish on five, Keane O'Connor with a time fault, that's an incredible score.
Yeah, and to be fair to Keane knew we had... So he didn't ride in the first round because our first three lads went clear. So he decided to rest him. And then just the way it unfolded, he had a chance to go clear to win it first and to avoid a jump off. But he knew he could have 3 seconds over the time allowed, because obviously we had zero, we only had four faults, and the next team, Switzerland, had eight. So, he took his time and took that time penalty of a second, but with clear round was all he needed. And it was brilliant, very, very impressive. Look at the strength and depth we have. I'm in Wellington at the moment, where the last Rolex Grand Prix is on this weekend, and over the course of the next 3 or 4 days, we've got 42 different riders riding at different levels, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, and the depth we have in Ireland in show jumping is incredible.
There is an incredible depth there, as you were saying, but you are the new acting head of high performance. How are you finding this role? Because you've walked into a political minefield.
Yeah, look, thankfully, my job is to deal with the high performance directors, the chef de keeps, and the athletes. Sport Ireland have been brilliant in terms of supporting us. And I'm not just looking after show jumping. I've got eventing, dressage, and para dressage, where we all have representation in Paris. So, look, the athletes are the easy part, Ruby, because they just want to win and they want to get better. And that's where I'm going to spend most of my time. But the political side of it is starting to settle down. And obviously it's been a lot of turmoil in the past, but there's some good people involved, and we're just in every power to try and support our teams and our athletes in over the course of the summer, but also mainly towards Paris.
Bernard, does show jumping get the promotion and the coverage that it deserves when you consider there's very significant success on an almost weekly basis, but it is such a battle to get coverage compared to other sports?
Yeah, look, I think, like, I love sport and I would follow any sport, but to be honest, I think we've a job to do to try and get show jumping and the Irish horse sport back into the national media in Ireland. I think we are a country that love horses, but unfortunately, if you take for example show jumping, it's behind a paywall, and I had family and friends who watched Ocala the other night, would subscribe to Clip My Horse and watched it on that, and they wouldn't have been on the radar only for they knew I was over here, and then when they watched it, they loved it because the format's good, it's exciting, and so many people go to the RDS and enjoy the Dublin Horse Show, which is a phenomenal event, but it kind of goes out of the of our minds probably for the other 51 weeks of the year. So that's part of the job, is, and hopefully Paris can do that, because we have an unbelievable chance of meddling in show jumping, and obviously hopefully we can meddle in the other disciplines, but that is our chance. Obviously Dublin Horse Show this year has signed up with Rolex. It's going to be another phenomenal event, but what can we do for the other 50 weeks of the year to get it on the national airwaves, because we are competing with Gaelic games, rugby, soccer, etc. But I think that we have something that we can showcase, and it's just a case of managing, I suppose, the necessity to stick to what goes behind the paywall, but also to try and get us out there and get the riders and get the the owners to tell their story. Because, like, I was lucky enough, Ruby, I was in Cheltenham with you, and the access that the top, top trainers and riders give to the media is phenomenal in horse racing. And I know, speaking to these lads who are representing Ireland, they're mad keen to promote the sport. So I think there's definitely an opportunity there for us. But I think we have this window this year, and we need to take advantage of it.
Pardon, I would say that possibly the biggest drawback is the fact that it is in Florida. If it's not in Florida, you're on the Sunshine Tour in the south of Europe. The fact that we only have one marquee show here at the RDS, we need more than that. The money isn't here. They're all professionals, and they have to go after.
And then the time
money.
Difference impacts on the coverage as well.
Huge.
Yeah, for sure. Look, it's a global sport, and like even here, Wellington, like they've been competing here for the last 7 or 8 weeks, you know, and all kinds of events. So Cala is a new show. A billionaire basically built this resort, and he's put everything in place, and Longines went there, but Wellington is kind of the home of it traditionally, and the time difference doesn't help. But yeah, you're right, like the RDS, it'd be brilliant if we could have more shows, I think, there, because everyone loves going there, and you don't want to dilute it, but there's a lot of shows in Europe which are only an hour or two time difference, so I think I wouldn't see that as being a difference, and all our riders would outdrift back to Europe over the next 5 or 6 weeks and compete on the European circuit in Rome, St. Gallen, Rotterdam, etc. So there's definitely an opportunity to get it onto our TV screens a little bit more, and certainly that's something we're aware of.
We wanted to chat rugby with you while we had you as well. News from Ulster today, Johnny Petrie leaving as chief executive following Dan McFarland out the door. And obviously an understanding and acknowledgement maybe from the IRFU that things have not been right maybe on and off the pitch in Ulster, and it's time for somewhat of a system reset.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think David Humphries is obviously coming in to replace David Nusafora. He had a very high-powered role in Ulster rugby off the field before he went to Gloucester. You know, he will know what's broken there. The fact is, the reality is that Dan McFarland was going to be operating on a far smaller budget next year than the one he's on this year. This year was less than last year. So maybe a new CEO can help plug that gap. I think the RFU need a strong Ulster, and you know, a new head coach will come in, and that's a start. But realistically, you look at a roster, and they don't have the depth that you need to compete with the top teams in Europe. And even at 10, like next year, they want to play Nathan Doak, who's a 9 at 10, which is no problem with that. But you would like to have an experienced 10 there to allow him transition to that position, where Munster are losing Joey Carberry. They're signing Billy Burns, so they will now have Billy Burns and Jack Crowley. And that's just one example. But when you look at Ulster, they don't have too deep of proven international quality players in enough positions, I believe, and that's not gonna help the head coach. So whether the CEO, a new CEO, will help change that, obviously the powers that be feel that while they're going to look for a new head coach, they might as well look for a new CEO, and that decision's been made.
Yeah, and just a word on Connacht, obviously a disappointing result for them at the weekend, and outside the top eight in the URC, and like they need to put the burners on fairly significantly now between now and the tail end of the season.
Yeah, I watched the back last night. That's as bad a performance I've seen from Connacht in a long time, because the Lions are... They got hammered by Bordeaux in the first round of Europe, but Bordeaux are a top team. The Lions aren't. And I think, you know, Pete Wilkins would be really disappointed with that. The Lions had a red card in the first half, and actually, if anything, Connacht looked pretty clueless and rudderless. So they need to step it up, back up this weekend. But they need to be very careful. The top eight isn't a given anymore. With the South African teams and their improvement with Benetton and how strong they are. So, yeah, big test of their character this week.
That is a big test, because they're in Benetton this weekend, and a lot of the Italian team that do well in the Six Nations are part of that team.
100%. Benetton are a good side. They're genuinely going to be top eight and maybe even sneaking into top four. So this will test them. In fairness to Connacht, they over the last 3 or 4 years, they do throw in these really poor performances where they don't have the grit and resilience you'd like in your team, but then they tend to regain your trust. But it's a horrible habit to be in, but you still would want them to show a little bit more this week and then work out that consistency issue a little bit later.
Only a fortnight, Bernard, to the European Rugby Champions Cup. It's back on the 6th of April. Leinster obviously have Leicester at home, and Munster have to go to Northampton. Ireland did well in the Six Nations, but there was a change in England as well, so they could be two saucy ties.
Yeah, absolutely. And I watched Saracens at the weekend, Hammer Harlequins, and the English clubs are definitely better from the dilution of the, or the three clubs going out of business just meant the other nine got stronger. Northampton are definitely a test. Obviously, they beat Munster in Thomond Park earlier in the year. Leicester, big pack, but you'd fancy Leinster to be able to get one over on them. I think Leinster are going to be really interesting this weekend in terms of integrating back their internationals. How many of them play Friday night against the Bulls? I thought some of the Irish players looked tired the last two rounds of the Six Nations, and whether it's physical tiredness or emotional tiredness, but certainly Graham Rowntree and Leo Cullen will want to see a bit of freshness and a bit of bite about them, because Europe is there very much looming on the radar, and getting them back settled as a team again and getting all the Irish stuff out of their minds will be important.
Well, Bernard, I hope you're enjoying the glamour of Wellington, because when you get back and have to go inventing, it'll be Torella, Mill Street and Ballandennis, and it won't be so glamorous then. So enjoy your show jumping while you're with those lads. Thanks a million for taking our call. Have a safe flight home.
Wellington, Florida, rather than Wellington, New Zealand, in case people are worried that we've had the poor man up in the middle of the night to chat to us. Georgia, Greece looks destined to go to extra time, so a tense evening ahead for them. Wales, Poland, Ukraine, Iceland kicks off at 7:45. We should mention as well, we talked about the URC in the Champions Cup, the Women's Guinness Six Nations continues, Ireland against Italy in the RDS on Sunday, live on Radio 1 and also live on RT2 television. So, we're going to continue our build-up, Ruby, to the soccer 7:45 kickoff at the Aviva between the Republic of Ireland and Switzerland. We're going to hear from Brian Kerr after 7 o'clock, but I will bid you farewell.
Good night, Damien. I hope you enjoyed the game. I hope it's as good a match as last weekend.
Do our best. We have a quick break to take news on the way, and then Brian Kerr after 7 o'clock.
Game on.
Football.
You're very welcome back to Game On, where we are continuing our build-up to live coverage and match commentary of the Republic of Ireland against Switzerland at the Aviva Stadium. We will be joining Adrian Eames and his guests shortly. It's a 7:45 kickoff. But one man who has been enjoying somewhat of a return and a surprise return to the international fold over the past week or so has been Brian Kerr. He has been appointed as the kind of interim technical advisor, working with the interim head coach, John O'Shea. And he's been chatting in advance of the game tonight to FAI TV about his renewed role within the Irish setup.
Well, it's been very, very interesting, very enjoyable from my point of view. I didn't know any of the players personally, except for Jane McGrath, who spent some time obviously at St. Patrick's Athletic in the past, and I met him a couple of times then. But other than that, it was completely new for me. But the good news was that I knew a lot of the staff, many of them who played and are successful underage teams in the past, and some of them played in the senior international team. So it was nice to meet them all again. But all the new people have also been very, very welcoming to me, and it's been really, really nice, very interesting to see the development of the structures around the international team close up, and the use of technology and how much that's been integrated into the preparations for the games. I would say successfully in the case of the game against Belgium so far, but it's been really good.
John has praised your input in the week leading up to the Belgian game. How have you enjoyed working with the staff, but also, you know, technical advisor, what sort of input have you been able to have?
Not very much, really. I think I was delighted to be approached to take on the role. I've known John, obviously, since he was a young lad playing the underage international teams, and followed his career very closely. Was involved with a little bit of it along the way at times. I've been a kind of a sounding board, I suppose, for John at times, giving him the odd little bits of information and the clues, and maybe little bits of advice in relation to how he might go about using the other people, using the other staff members, and go about making his own decisions around the tactics, the training, the coaching side of it, and the selection of the squad, which is absolutely crucial. So working with Glenn, Glenn Whelan, Paddy McCarthy, Stephen Rice, all of whom played in the underage teams, as I said earlier, in the past, has been interesting seeing their development as coaches. I saw them developing as players and watching the different career paths they had, but now seeing them up close as coaches has been very enjoyable, and I think that they've been a great addition to the international staff. And then of course many of the team analysts have added another dimension to it. Gerard Dunn, who I worked with previously in the FAI, Martin Doyle has been great, you know, doing some fabulous work on a consistent basis, helping out Stephen. So that's all been very enjoyable. Some new people, some people that I've known, maybe hadn't seen for a while, but I've admired their development in football through the years as players, particularly in Glenn's case, in John's case, and in Paddy's case, and now Paddy as a coach. Watching him in the Premier League is very interesting, with his work at Crystal Palace, Glenn making his way, getting experience, not too long finished now with the game. And of course, Stephen, who had a great career around the League of Ireland, has been getting experience both in England with Crystal Palace and now with the national team. So it's all been very good, and they've been very nice to me, and also they have kind of bounced ideas off me at times. Not sure that they always need to, but they have anyway.
Players-wise, obviously a 0-0 draw against Belgium. How did you view the game? Very, very positive result.
A very positive result against one of the highest-ranking teams in world football, who for many years now have been one of the main things in European football. Didn't go as well for them at finals as maybe they hoped in recent years, but they still have an awful lot of high-quality players. I thought the game was very, very interesting. I felt that the detailed tactical work that was done on the training ground got a big reward in the game. I think there was a clear pattern to our play, both defensively, in the defensive organisation, and an approach to how we might make opportunities against Belgium. We got those opportunities, but unfortunately didn't take them. But overall, I thought it was a very good performance and a positive performance. And the fact that we kept a clean sheet and that Kivian wasn't too bothered with too many shots, I think shows the extent of the work that was put in before the game and by the players on the training ground, and then delivering in the match. It's all right, you know, doing work on the training pitch and showing them videos and doing analysis and telling them what may happen in the game, but it's another matter to implement it and come out with a decent result, which I thought it was. A little bit disappointing that we didn't manage to score a goal, but encouraging that we were defensively so solid, had our spells where we took control of the game, made a few clear-cut chances, and then we had to, you know, hang in, I suppose, later in the game. When they made substitutions, we made substitutions. They got a little bit on top of us, but we dug in and got there fairly comfortably to a nil-all draw, I felt, in the end.
Seems like there's plenty of competition in the squad strength throughout almost the entire 27, as it currently stands.
Well, the players have been very busy in the training, trying to make the biggest impression possible for John. I think the performance of the players the other day makes the team selection quite difficult for him. The team played so well, it would be quite easy to go with the same starting 11 again. But I know that that's not going to be the case. I think the team would be the better of a little bit of freshening up here and there. It's always the case when you have two games close together at this high level and high tempo game, that it's better to make some changes, I think, in the team. Maybe not too many. You're right about the players being very competitive in the training and trying to put themselves forward for selection. But unfortunately, you can only pick 11. He managed to get some subs on the field the other day. And I think in the overall circumstances of it, I feel that John is right in not going the experimental road. I think he said that it wasn't about experimenting. He was given the two games and asked to try and achieve something from them in a short space of time with regard to the selection of the squad, the preparation for the games. Only really 3 days of real training in the build-up to the first game, and now we've much tougher task, I think, because we've only got that one day really to analyse what happened on Saturday, how did Switzerland go about their business against Denmark, and how do we go about
putting on our best possible performance, both in the attacking sense and the defensive sense. So it's quite an awkward one. Switzerland, very good players, as we know. Lots of high-profile players that we know from European Champions League, from the Premier League and so on. Very, very well-structured, organised team. The manager would have played for Switzerland when I was actually... Yeah. When we last played against Switzerland in my time as manager, and he was a tough nut to crack in his defensive line with his brother playing further up the pitch. But he has them playing very, very well. They've qualified for the Euros. The likes of, you know, Shaqiri, Xhaka, some very, very good attacking players, Okafor.
Yeah.
They'd be a real threat to us. And a great physical strength in the team as well, with the likes of Aibesher and Freuler, Zakaria in the midfield. All players playing at a high level, as I mentioned earlier, and a lot of experience in defence too. So it'll be another very, very tough challenge. We've not had the preparation time you'd like to have. The gap between the matches is very tight, as I mentioned. But we hope that we put on a performance and give the crowd something to cheer about in the stadium.
And finally, you mentioned the stadium. You had a huge cheer when you put up on the big screen on Saturday. On a personal level, how much is it actually meant to be, you know, back involved in the Irish national team?
I suppose in some ways it's been quite emotional, really. Going to the game, I didn't see myself in that situation that I was in on Saturday, going to the game on the team bus and going in the team entrance with the team. I didn't actually see that coming around in my time in football again. So that part of it was quite emotional, and being involved with the players and the staff. But you know, this is not about me. It's about trying to help out when asked in a period of Irish football that has been probably a little bit difficult lately. You're looking at, you know, non-qualification for tournaments. I've aired my frustrations over the last few years and working in the media on that, and now I was offered the opportunity to try and help out for just this brief period of time. To give John and the staff a go, and the association, and whatever knowledge or experience I have, if it's a benefit to John and the lads, I'm more than thankful to be given the opportunity to give that little bit of knowledge out to the lads. But as I said earlier, I don't think they need an awful lot of help. They know the game. They're experienced in international football. John's 118 international caps, and working with so many brilliant coaches over the years has given him a great base. You know, Glenn, 91 international caps. He's seen a lot of humps and bumps along the road, knows how the game needs to be played. And equally, Paddy has had a great career at different levels of the game, but obviously he's well advanced on the coaching road as well, working with, you know, fabulous manager that he worked with, Roy Hodgson, for so long at Crystal Palace, and the other coaches they've had there too. So, you know, with them and Stephen Rice, I've been kind of learning from them as much as they've been picking up a few bits from me. I think I've been learning a lot from them. There's a whole new language around the game, around the coaching game, which I find very interesting. The phrases are different. The game hasn't changed that much, but some of the phrases used in relation to particular tactics in the game, the wording has changed. that's about it. But it's not the game, has it? It's still about working hard, trying to win the ball back in the best areas possible in the pitch, getting people forward, getting people in the box, getting numbers behind the ball when you haven't got the ball. Those basic principles of the game haven't changed. And I think all the staff have worked very hard to remind the players about those principles and their responsibilities in the game, and it's been very impressive. And I just hope that the crowd turns up again and gets behind the team and can see some
maybe development in the team and some action too around the goal mouths, which is what people go to the games for as well. As well as hoping to see victories, you like to see action around the goals, and I hope we're going to give them that.
So that was Brian Kerr, the interim technical advisor, speaking to FAI TV. We're going to take a break, and after that we are going to hand over to Adrian Eames and guests at the Aviva Stadium. 7:45 kickoff for the Republic of Ireland against Switzerland. Pat Fenlon, Keith Tracy, John Kenny, all part of the team. They will be with Adrian after this quick break.